In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
When people lie, they concoct all sorts of stories and falsehoods to lead you down different roads to hide the truth. And that's certainly true of government when it lies. But it's a bit more than that. Because as we say frequently here on iSpy Radio, elections matter because you are giving someone else legal power over you, your life, your business, the protection or not of your rights. God gives you rights. It's the government's job to protect your rights. Do you really want immoral people guarding those rights of yours? So when the government lies, that's a whole different matter. They can legally prevent you from getting to the truth. Good luck suing and holding an individual bureaucrat personally responsible for anything, especially for lying. You can go to jail for lying. Try putting government in jail, or even just that lying bureaucrat. Worse, when they lie, they have an endless number of checks that they can write to pay for their own legal fees. They can exhaust you in courts. That's part of lawfare. Endless lawyers with endless spending accounts. Good luck fighting that to expose their lies. Trump's first impeachment. That should have been the warning shot that they will do anything to protect themselves and their scams and corruptions. By calling Ukraine and saying, alerting them really, that, hey, we've got this possible corruption scandal with Joe Biden we're looking into. What can you tell us about it, and do you have any evidence to support that? Oh, that whole conversation was terrifying to those who were part of the corruption or knew people who were part of it. If you tear down Obama, you tear down everything. You bring the left's whole system down. I think that's why Vindman panicked and totally freaked out. Remember, that call was a threat not just to our government, but to Ukraine's as well. How many in that government do you think were in on it? We've also said here that elections matter because there are trillions of dollars at stake. If people would do anything to steal $1 million from a bank, what would immoral people do to steal an election for a chance to steal $1 million times $1 million? And if your political opponent is closing in on your corruption and threatening to expose it, and the dozens if not hundreds of people inside government who helped you commit the fraud and helped you hide the fraud, what would those people on the inside be willing to do to take down their political opponents? Would anything be off limits? I think we all know the answer to that one. But here's the real question. If people are willing to go to any length to commit crimes and to cover up those crimes, where are the good people who have that same commitment and who will go to the end of the earth to stop them? Where are those people? Chuck Weiss is one of our two guests this week. We spoke to him just a few weeks ago, but didn't get to his election lawsuit that wants the state to let them prove there wasn't fraud in the election. But for some reason, they just don't want people to look. Chuck, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Mark.
So before we dig into the heart of your lawsuit, has there been any updates on it? It's now at the Ninth Circuit. Has there been any updates on it since we last talked a few weeks ago?
Well, it's not really. There's a scheduled hearing that's going to take place. I think it's in December when the court is going to hear the oral arguments as to why the case should be remanded back to the district court in Oregon for trial. But we don't know how that's going to happen. So everything is just kind of sitting on hold till we can get that part of it heard by the Ninth Circuit. The Kerry Lake case is also on appeal to the Ninth Circuit, and so there may be some interesting developments in that that could affect our case. We just don't know right now.
Okay. As I said, your lawsuit takes a bit of a novel approach because you're asking the state to let you look under the hood and to help them prove that there wasn't any fraud. Is that a pretty fair way to sum that up, your case?
Yes, and we're not alleging that the election in 2020 was actually stolen. We don't have any proof of that, like some people have claimed that it was. There's a lot of evidence that points at it, but the basis of our complaint is just getting the courts to allow us to look and to see just how much of a problem everything was. And when we prepared our case, just to give the listener a little bit of history, this all started in Colorado in the 2020 election because in Mesa County, Tina Peters was the elections clerk in that county, and she had been warned there were problems with the election machines back then. And an analysis of those machines, she made two different backup copies because of the rumors that she'd been hearing there were problems with it. An analysis of the backup showed that unbeknownst to the election clerk, there were three databases for storing vote totals created in each of those two elections that the machines were involved in. There's only supposed to be one. And the vote totals were altered using votes recorded from one database to populate another to change the election results. Hmm. Well, that's what she found because she made copies of all this. And, of course, we know the history from that was they went after her legally, and they've just been pummeling her with lawsuits and challenges to everything that she exposed. It's been very unfortunate. But that triggered Mr. Sipple in Oregon wanting to look at the Oregon machines in Washington County that clear ballot. They run those election machines. He wanted to look under the hood and see if there were any similar problems with the voting machines that Oregon uses in Washington County. Well, he put in a request, and that was immediately denied by the county officials. So he appealed that to the district attorney of Washington County, who then reversed them and said, no, he's entitled to look at this, and ordered them to turn over the databases that he wanted to examine in Washington County. And no sooner did the DA rule on that the state stepped in and filed an injunction to stop him from getting the database and then sued him, and he had to go to trial. I was at that trial last September, almost a year ago, and that went against Mr. Sipple. So the way all this has turned out is that the state is refusing to cooperate and refusing to let us look under the hood and see if there was any problems with those machines like it was discovered in Colorado. So then the Sipple case, after it went against us, that's what triggered our lawsuit that went to the district court. But we had canvassers and a lot of other people gathering information that points to all kinds of problems with Oregon's elections. So it doesn't matter whether it doesn't matter what you're hearing from the governor's office or politicians in this state who keep saying our elections in Oregon are pristine, they're sound, they're clear, and there's no problems with them. We got the best system ever. That is a bunch of bunk. That's what our data does not show. We've got all kinds of evidence of malfeasance and wrongdoing in the Oregon election system that we need to have examined and have the courts force the counties to let us look at these things and correct them if there is, in fact, corrections that need to be made. And we're almost certain that there needs to be.
Well,
the whole system is broken.
Well, you would think that the state would welcome such a chance to prove there was no cheating beyond just saying, there was no election fraud, you'll just have to trust us. Okay, let's take a break. It's all about fraud today. We're talking with Chuck Weiss about potential election fraud, and then later on we'll be talking with Kim Herman about some emails where Joe Biden was using fraudulent aliases. Now, why would he do that? Stay with us. So much more to talk about. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Chuck Weiss. He's a meteorologist and scientist. And we normally talk to him about global warming and whatnot, but today we're talking to him about potential election fraud here in Oregon. They have a case that's currently right before the Ninth Circuit Court, and they're looking at to have that remanded back to the state to say, no, this really does need to go to trial. And so, Chuck, you were talking about the state being very resistant. It is rather odd when you think about it that the state is resistant to you guys offering to help prove that there was no election fraud. I mean, shouldn't someone who says there's no cheating want to be able to prove that beyond just saying, trust us, there's no fraud here?
Well, yes, Mark, that's exactly the reaction you would want to get from the officials that are governing our elections and in charge of all of this stuff. If there is indeed a pristine voting system in Oregon, like these people keep telling us that there is, and there's no problems with it, and it's been running smoothly for years and continues to do that, they would welcome our inquiries and let us look. They wouldn't have done what they did to Mr. Sipple and deny him and actually sued him to stop him from getting copies of the databases for the clear ballot machines in Washington County. All he wanted to do was look. He wasn't alleging anything. But under the suspicion of what happened in Colorado, of course we wanted to see it. And if there wasn't any problems in Oregon, like there was in Colorado, what was discovered there by the backup databases that Tina Peters made, then they would just be able to open everything up and show us. But instead, they said, no, all of the databases are proprietary. They're secret. It will damage everything if that ever gets out into the public domain. But our attorney argued there shouldn't even be a database. If the machines are used just to count votes, which is what they should be used for, you don't need to create databases where you're sorting out votes and doing things that otherwise a normal counting machine wouldn't even do. But that's what this does, and we just wanted to, Mr. Sipple's got an engineering background, so he just wanted to look at the databases and make sure everything was kosher there and not what was going on in Colorado. But of course, we never got that far. And then when we got involved in our case, then we started noticing all kinds of other bad things that were happening. You know, the canvassers went out and found all kinds of voters registered to addresses that aren't even real. This was going on in Multnomah, Lane County, and some of the other counties around here, and not just a small number, but a fair number of them. Right. And then at the time all of this was going on, and this whole business about the 2020 elections, in 2021, the following year, the Oregon legislature seemed to be very nervous about the fact we wanted to look into what was going on in Oregon. So they went ahead without approval of the voters or anything else. They passed House Bill 2681, which basically says we don't have to clean up our voter rolls because they were sued by Judicial Watch over that. And then they passed this bill that says, you know, we don't have to clean them up. And we don't want to because every vote's got to count. You know, they've sacrificed voter integrity
aside from your current election fraud case here, have you thought about challenging HB 2681 because that does not follow federal election laws? There are laws on the books that says you have to clean up the voter rolls.
Well, that's in our complaint. It's discussed on paragraph 87. And then they also, in the same year, to the listeners that weren't aware of this, they passed 3291, which was signed into law by the governor, and that law permits the counting of ballots received by mail up to 7 days after an election, even if there's no postmark on them. Now, I would just pose this question to the listenership. What person in their right mind would pass these sorts of laws that doesn't require the voter rolls get regularly cleaned up and allow votes to be counted and not even postmarked up to 7 days past an election? There's only one reason why you would ever want to do that, and that's to make it easier for nefarious activity and cheating. There's just no other way to look at it except for that. Hmm. But see, they always come back and say, no. We're doing this because every vote's got to count, and we want to make voting as easy and get everybody to vote in an election that we can get to vote. And that's all fine and dandy, but there comes responsibility with voting. You can't just throw out all of the security measures and say we're doing it because it's got to be fair to everybody. And then of course they'll also say if you make people show up at a polling place and have to show ID, well, that's racist. They've always got some reason why things have got to be their way, and they don't make any sense in terms of how they're throwing out election security. And that's a big issue with us, and it should be with every Oregonian.
Well, it should be, because, yes, I agree that every vote should count, but every legal vote should count, and every illegal vote should be thrown out. I'd like to talk to you about this Michigan case. This made the news about a month or so ago. And, I mean, it is as blatant voter fraud as you can get. It was based around GBI strategies. This is a mule group that had automatic weapons and more. It was pretty clear and compelling voter fraud. And it was originated with reports to the police. It was turned over to the FBI, which promptly buried it. And the Gateway Pundit has been covering this, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Today's show page is 1337. Just look in the show notes section. And on October 8th, 2020, a person dropped off between 8,000 and 10,000 completed voter registration applications in Muskegon, Michigan. The city clerk noticed that numerous forms appeared to have been completed by the same writer. Addresses on multiple forms were invalid or non-existent. Phone numbers were erroneous and signatures didn't match. 12 days later, that same person dropped off another 2,500 registrations. The female suspect said that she was being paid $1,150 a week by GBI Strategies. The police raided one of their locations in Southfield, Michigan, and found partially completed voter registration forms, Pelican cases in the room with semi-automatic rifles joined with suppressors and optics and customized pistols, a case with four rifles and four pistols, dozens of new phones, hundreds of prepaid payment cards, And I'm sure there's no voter fraud in Michigan when you hear things like this, but I'm also sure that if Trump had won under dubious votes appearing in the middle of the night and having a field operation headquarters with dozens of guns, I'm pretty sure the media would want to look at that. But for some reason, they seem to be uninterested in this voter fraud case. Granted, that is not typical, but I wouldn't put it past Oregon, but we don't know until we can look under the hood. But you've already mentioned some examples already, but what is the most blatant kind of fraud that you guys have uncovered here in Oregon that really prompted you to want to take a look at this?
Well, basically, the canvassers, they've gone around in Lane County, and they've looked at people registered to vote that don't have a real address. They found all kinds of that in the record. They also went through and looked at the voter registrations in the state of Oregon after they passed 2691, and it turns out we have more people registered to vote than eligible voters right now in Oregon. Mm. I mean, what's up with that? And then we asked them to correct this, and they just refused to do it. They passed these laws, which then this gave them protection not to have to clean up the rolls as they were supposed to do under the law. So they are in violation of things in that regard, and we've got many examples cited in the complaint that talk about this sort of thing, of people being registered to vote with bogus addresses, multiple people registered to vote at the same address where those people aren't living. There were many examples of all of this, which goes right back to the dirty voter rolls. So people were registering to vote, and apparently the state was accepting the registrations without really checking them out, just accepting them verbatim. And of course, ballots are going to go out to those places under all these registrations, which many we think are just not valid. And we wanted to check into all of this. And of course, with the lawsuit where it is right now, and there's being no directive from the courts to let us look at this sort of thing, it's all in limbo until the Ninth Circuit decides some of this.
Yeah.
But, I guess we just need to be
less necrophobic, afraid of dead people voting. Let's take a break there. Come back. Still lots more to talk about with the election fraud with Chuck Weiss. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's all about fraud today here on the iSpy Radio Show. We're wrapping things up with Chuck Weiss, whom we most often have on to talk about the fraud of climate change, which is so much fake science, more of a cult now than anything resembling science. But today we've been talking about election fraud. And Chuck, going on that last segment, I had to interrupt, but you started to say we also found out. Could you continue that? What did you find out?
We also found out, Mark, that all students at the University of Oregon, and there's 30-some thousands of them, received two ballots when they're signed up to vote in Oregon elections. And then they're encouraged to put their unused ballots in a recycling bin, which we found out later was collected by the SEIU, that's a public employee union, and we found out that from some witnesses who said they solicited help with these supposedly discarded ballots with phone banking and filling them out. And witnesses to this process attest that the filling out of ballots was coercive and completely favored union-endorsed Democrat candidates. This was going on at the University of Oregon, and to this day, as far as we know, the University of Oregon students are still receiving two ballots, one to their permanent address and one to the university address.
And what was happening to those ballots after they were allegedly recycled? Could anybody just come in and scoop those up? And I mean, it doesn't sound like they were secured
absolutely.
At all.
Absolutely. There were some witnesses saying that the person in charge of these ballots was actually soliciting help to fill them out. There were some witnesses that we have that would be able to testify to that effect. So they were not just being thrown away. They were being filled out.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of ballots that could sway votes on a number of things if you're doing that sort of thing.
The biggest problem with our election system, I think, is that once you submit that ballot, once it's dropped into the box, it magically disappears. And once they open that, they scan the envelope to show that you got it, so you can go online and say and look. Oh, you know, great, my ballot has arrived. Well, the envelope has arrived. You could have sent them a recipe for Aunt Shirley's favorite chicken soup. Once that envelope is opened, there's nothing connecting your ballot with your envelope. Anything could happen to that ballot from that point forward.
That's right. The only thing that it tells you when you go online to the Oregon Elections Division after any election you voted in is you can verify whether they received your ballot because or your envelope because they scanned it in. But then when they open the envelope and take the ballot out, it has no affirmative identification to anything. So it can be destroyed, it can be swapped, a number of things can happen to it, and you have no guarantee that that's not happening. And with the nefarious things we have been able to gather with our canvassers and other people that looked into some of these matters, there's a lot to be suspicious of, and that's why we want this case to be remanded back to the district court and the district court to order the state for this to go to trial and for them to have to defend the evidence we've gathered in the complaint.
Hmm. Well, if a magician can make a rabbit appear out of a hat on stage while everybody's looking, just imagine the kind of magic that can happen behind closed doors when nobody is looking. And
exactly.
I think that's a massive problem.
And we've seen lots of evidence of this in the 2020 election in the swing states. The fraud that went on in the swing states was just unbelievably bad. And that included Arizona, too. But like I said, Oregon was something after the fact. We looked into it here only because of what we saw in the other states. We want to make sure our elections are, in fact, clean here. And we've had nothing but resistance from the authorities to want us to look either at the machines or to be able to try the evidence that we've gathered from canvassing that we've done.
Yeah. So going forward, your case has a couple of things that I think will be hard to overcome. One is, they say, standing. And I just think this is so much BS in terms of it's a cop-out by these judges to essentially refuse to look at anything that could prove election fraud. I mean, this notion of standing, I mean, how can any citizen whose vote has been affected not have standing? I mean, it's like saying the bank was robbed, but they didn't take that much out of your account, or saying, yes, you were mugged, but it's not like they killed you. Come back when you're dead. When you're dead, then you'll have standing. Except in this case, your country will be dead. And by then it's too late. Where are the judges who are going to stand up for America?
Well, I'd like to know the answer to that myself. The standing is a weak, weak argument because they're basically saying, by taking a standing position, that no one individual in this complaint can show that we've been damaged individually enough to where we'd have standing, such as if you were a candidate. But we actually did have one person who was a candidate, a Mei Wong, who ran for a district seat in Clackamas County. And she actually took screenshots of this and witnessed her vote count actually going down through time, not going up, as the election returns were coming in. If that isn't damning, I don't know what is. But
well,
that's direct evidence.
It's like during the federal election, is that you had that one court say that President Trump did not have standing. I mean, that's absurd. But, you know, we've only got a couple minutes here with you. I look at places like Georgia where there were tens and tens of thousands of fraudulently cast ballots. I saw a list of it. I'll see if I can put that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. But you had thousands of people under 18 voting, felons that were voting, thousands and thousands of bad addresses. I think in all it was close to 70,000, just shooting from memory here. And Trump only lost that by 11,000. What would courts accept as actual evidence of actual election fraud that would prove to the courts that, yes, bad actors interfered with the election that resulted in people being elected who clearly should not have been?
Well, I think just letting the evidence go onto the record and having all the people involved take the stand and testify and show what they've got, that's what needs to happen. The problem is the courts have not been willing to allow cases to even move forward to where this evidence gets on the record and both sides get to question it until a jury of their peers can decide, yes, there definitely was fraud here, enough to overturn an election or whatever the case may happen to show. But when you block it on standing and you're basically saying no one individual can prove enough injury to where this thing can move forward, that's just in my opinion, that makes no sense. Mm. It's a frivolous answer to just block the admission of all of this bad information onto the court record to ever get it corrected. And that's a serious problem, Mark, because if we can't fix our elections nationwide, then we're not going to have a country. Yeah. You have to have good elections, and our remedy to all of this is to go back to in polling places, get rid of the machines, have tabulations made by hand, and you have to show a valid ID, just like the old days. And there can always be cheating no matter what you do, but the point is you've got to mitigate the cheating right to the smallest amount possible, and the way it's set up right now, opposite direction and making it easier and easier to cheat.
Yeah, they sure are. And this notion that there's plenty of evidence, but it's amazing what you don't find when you refuse to look. Chuck, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark. We'll talk to you again.
Kimberly Herman is the Chief Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to defending liberty and suing the government for its overreaches when it violates your constitutional rights. They recently sued the National Archives to force them to release Joe Biden's emails in which he used fictitious names Robin Ware, Robert L. Peters, and J.R. B. Ware, just for starters. Kimberly, it's great to talk to you again.
Great to be with you.
So didn't they also just recently find a fourth potential fake email?
They did. There were some news stories out there the other day, and I've heard when that there might be a few more. We have no evidence of that, but you know, when these politicians use alias emails, it's our experience that if they use one, they use a lot of them.
Yes, and because you now found that four, I know that you've targeted 5,400 of these so far. Does that mean if there's now this fourth or maybe fifth and sixth other email aliases, does that mean there's probably maybe thousands of more emails that yet to be uncovered?
There absolutely could be. Okay. Whether the National Archives has them or not, we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, we will come back to that. But, you know, you guys have fought so many great fights, one of which we followed with a lot of interest, the case of St. Louis DA Kim Gardner's corruption, massive amounts of abuse there. She was a George Soros DA, and one of the abuse cases led to the Missouri governor stepping down as a result of her prosecution, which it turned out, oops, didn't have the evidence that she said she did. But she finally resigned in May, and we haven't talked to you since she resigned, but I'm sure that your efforts to expose her corruption, that resignation had to feel pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, we worked on that case for years. We brought that case on behalf of John Solomon, mm-hmm. Who is the, you know, the founder and chief editor of Just the News. And what we were asking for there were just emails, right? We asked for all the emails between Kim Gardner and her office and a number of entities that were Soros-funded, because we knew that there had to be something in there related to Kim Gardner's efforts to push the former governor, Eric Greitens, out of office in Missouri. And our emails led to some really interesting information that we were able to expose, showing that there was some sordid relationships going on, right? And that there were email communications and that there was an ulterior motive here. And local prosecutors, yes, they're elected, but they are funded largely by the Soros entities,
yeah.
And then they're being weaponized. And so us being able to expose that and then her leaving office, that was a win.
Yeah, absolutely it was. So congratulations to you guys. So before we get to your lawsuit seeking Joe Biden's emails where he used these fake names to conduct his business, let's speculate just a little bit. Let's say that what we've learned from learned about Biden's corruption is all true. If it's all true, doesn't this mean that he had help from others to do this corruption scheme? Because, I mean, as a VP, you don't operate in a vacuum, so I don't think it stops with him. But it might also explain why so many people are working to keep this out of the daylight, because exposing Joe could also expose a lot of that corruption that goes beyond just Joe, I would think. And I guess what I'm asking here is, how far do you think this corruption really goes?
I mean, it's anyone's guess, but I can tell you what we've seen in records, right? So the lawsuit that I know we're going to talk about and that we filed a few weeks ago is just one lawsuit that we have brought to kind of shed light on this. We've been working with John Solomon for years now to bring FOIA cases, to bring FOIAs, and to expose these records. And in them, we have seen memos. We have seen emails with top State Department employees, with Hunter Biden and his associates getting access to those top State Department employees, being at dinners, being at, you know, events, things like that, that they normally would not be at, right? And so there's certainly a lot of that information that we've already exposed, assuming that these emails actually do include government information. I anticipate that we're going to see a lot more of that.
Hmm. Well, according to the Democrats, there's no evidence whatsoever of Joe Biden's corruption. So it'll be interesting to see once you hand them those emails, if they suddenly change their tune or come up with some other excuse as to why this is perfectly normal for the vice president to be using aliases to conduct these kinds of business with these foreign entities. So if Joe was, or maybe still is, wheeling and dealing and millions are flowing from foreign entities through shell companies to Hunter and then back to Joe, Wouldn't government agencies tasked with such oversight have been aware of that money flow? Or do government agencies just simply not pay attention to politicians' bank accounts?
I would believe that they would be aware of it. Whether or not they're paying attention and they want to pay attention is a completely different story, right?
Right.
I mean, if we saw one thing with Russiagate, it was that we really have a DOJ and a national security offices that are just not working for the people right now. They are part of the swamp, unfortunately. We saw lots of corruption there. We tried to expose as much as we could through the work that we do. And we really need to get back to rule of law in this country
so absolutely.
We can have some confidence in them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Biden's corruption might also explain in part why Biden and so many others in government, you know, if they were all in on it or aware of it, are so willing to keep throwing billions of dollars at Ukraine. It could be hush money. I mean, to keep things quiet, because one would think that Ukraine could have its own evidence that they could release. And that's why government officials should not be taking money from foreign entities or anywhere for that matter. It exposes them and us to potential blackmail.
I mean, that's possible, right? I don't have any actual information on that, but it definitely does lead one to speculate. And if there is one thing we know that Hunter Biden was part of these companies that were operating in Ukraine. We know that there was aid that was pulled. All of that has been pieced together numerous times. There is plenty of evidence. I don't care what the Democrats say. There is plenty of evidence out there showing all of that. And so you can't hide from the documents.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's why we want the documents.
Yep.
They will tell the truth.
Yep, absolutely. So do you think this was one of those open secrets, you know, where it's just common knowledge? Oh, that's just Joe. He's always been this way. So if you have this info of what he might have been doing while vice president, I don't think people become vice president and then start doing this kind of thing. Do you?
Probably not. Right. When we look at Congress in general, you can look at people's net worth when they go into office and people's net worth when
yes.
they come out of public office. And we can all draw our own conclusions there. But at the end of the day, people should go into public service to be public servants,
yes. yep.
right? We are a country of the people, not of the politician's pocketbook.
Yes, absolutely right. So, okay, everyone stay with us. When we come back, we're going to be talking about their lawsuit to break open those fraudulent emails from Joe Biden. Stay with us. Southeastern Legal Foundation is a nonprofit organization that sues the government when it violates your constitutional rights or overreaches and steps outside of its actual authority. Kimberly Herman is their chief counsel, and they recently sued the National Archives to release some 5,400 emails they have in their possession in which Joe Biden used at least three different and now four different pseudonyms. And they are suing because the archives stonewalled their freedom of information request. And so you guys and John Solomon pursued these emails since 2021. You were told they didn't, they meaning the National Archives, didn't have access to them until January 20th, 2017 and would not be made public until 5 years later. But then they haven't released any of them now more than 2 years in 2021. It was 4 years, not 5 years. So you had pursued these because they could reveal that Joe Biden shared confidential government information with his son, Hunter, while then vice president. So a lot of questions here. How did you get put onto these emails in the first place? I mean, how did you know to look for them or that the National Archives even had them?
There were some news stories out there after the Hunter Biden laptop information became public. And so some of the reporters out there who had authenticated in various ways, I presume, the information that was out there had put emails out. And when you look at them, you can see that some of these are not personal emails. It's not saying, hey, you want to come over Sunday for dinner, right? Or go to a ball game together. This was sending government information to his son. Those became public. We saw them. And then the question became, how many others are there?
Hmm.
What else is in these? And so we simply submitted a FOIA request to get the records.
So one of the questions that first jumped to my mind is, why does the National Archives have these emails to begin with? Does this mean that Joe was using government computers to send emails using fake names to run his shady business deals with foreign agents?
Yeah, so there's certain laws out there that require those in office, right? They're actually supposed to forward any emails that they do on a personal email address to their government-issued email. Obviously, that wasn't happening here. But when he had to turn over his vice presidential records, these got turned over to the National Archives, right? And so now the National Archives has these. They're asserting that they are part of the vice presidential record, which is why they said they couldn't give them to us until 2022. You know, now we have people coming out saying, oh, well, they were personal emails, so maybe we can't give them anyway. That's a bunch of baloney. And if that's the case, let the judge in our case see all of the emails and make a decision for herself whether or not these are personal or government information and subject to public, you know, public production.
Well, this sounds suspiciously like the Hillary Clinton email scandal. But just the gall of this, you know, both Hillary and Joe Biden are attorneys, and they should know that these laws, you know, govern them too. But they just seem to flaunt their nose at this. It's not like they didn't know that these laws were there, and yet they're doing this anyway. That is really despicable. As an attorney, you should certainly know better.
Yeah, I mean, what's really interesting, actually, is if you look at Hillary Clinton, she let her bar license lapse back in, I believe it was 2003 or 2006, by just not doing her continuing education. And the reason for that is that the only lasting effect that Bill Clinton had when he perjured himself was that we, Southeastern Legal Foundation, pursued the lawsuit where he lost his bar license. Hmm. And so now when we actually have attorneys that take presidential office, they typically let their licenses lapse. If you look at Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, and do a little digging, because they know that they could actually be brought up on ethics charges for a lot of the shady stuff that goes on.
Hmm. Well, if Joe has been using government resources, or, you know, just not caring whether anybody knew this, that would seem to me anyway to indicate that Obama knew about this, or at least should have known, but might have told people that he didn't want to know, which itself kind of brings up a question. I mean, which of that is worse, that he knew or that he told people he didn't want to know?
Yeah, it's hard to say until we see the emails if he was on any of them, whether or not he knew about them. That's certainly a question that we've gotten a lot since we filed this lawsuit. But, you know, we can't speculate as to what he knew or didn't know. But, you know, was he a recipient of any of these emails? I don't know. Produce them for the American public and let us see. That's all we want. That's all we want, Nara. Just want to see them.
Well, again, you would think that these government agencies tasked with oversight and tracing these tens of millions of dollars going into the Biden family, you would think somebody in the CIA or the FBI or the DOJ or any number of other of these agencies would have said, hey, Mr. President, your vice president is doing some pretty shady dealings. Wouldn't that be par for the course?
I mean, it should be, right? I mean, obviously. But we also have a DOJ and a CIA and an ODNI, and we can go through the alphabet soup, right?
Right.
Who were arguably politically motivated. I mean, we saw that with Russiagate. We saw that with the first Trump impeachment, trial. And it's a matter of, you know, who are you working for? Are you working for the people or are you working for yourself? They should be working for the people. And it really does, like I said, it erodes the rule of law in this country.
Oh, absolutely.
We have laws.
Yeah.
Enforce them.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have a degree in analytical finance. You've got a graduate degree in accounting and worked as a CPA for a number of years before going into law. Is there any legitimate reason to use multiple fake emails and multiple fake names to do business through multiple shell companies with foreign entities? Because I can't think of one.
Not that I can think of. I mean, right, when you're using aliases, you're using shell companies, it definitely doesn't pass the smell test. Have we reviewed all those records? No. Have other people done that and pieced it together? Yes. I mean, I know I've mentioned our client and friend John Solomon a few times, and I know you have him on often, but all people really need to go to his website, and he's got great articles out there piecing every single item of this together with the records that they have, and it does not pass the smell test.
No, it absolutely does not. So you had said on Real America's Voice that America needs to know if Biden was sending government information to his son Hunter so that they could profit from that information, and you said that we know that did happen in several instances because those emails have already been uncovered and released, and you then went on to say, if that's what we know is in these, what else is out there? Okay, but if we have emails that If we already have emails that have that kind of evidence of corruption, Why has Biden not already been indicted?
For the same reasons that we've been talking about, right? I mean, in the sense of our DOJ, our FBI, what is it that they're doing? They're, you know, very, very busy investigating Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, they're very, very busy doing what they can to silence others. Why aren't they looking into this? Your guess is as good as mine. But they should be, right? And that is really, I mean, there's numerous reasons why the American public needs to see this, and needs to see what's in these emails, and they have a right to. That's the first reason. Yeah. The second is that if there is something sordid in this, the DOJ must take action.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's take a break. Coming up, we'll wrap up with Kimberly Herman. She's with the Southeastern Legal Foundation. They are suing the National Archives to release Joe Biden's emails. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is a fun segment here on the Ask By Radio Show. We're talking today to Kimberly Herman. She's the chief counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to defending liberty, and they recently sued the government to force them to release some of the 5,400 Joe Biden emails in which he used fictitious names to hide his identity. And, you know, in that last segment there, we're talking about, you know, what, if there's already evidence of Joe Biden doing these kind of corrupt deals, and so why hasn't he been indicted? I guess a similar question to that is, where are the AGs out there and district attorneys who are willing to go after Biden with this actual evidence of corruption versus what we see from the Democrat AGs who aggressively go after Trump? I mean, you know, if the Democrats were sitting on emails from Trump to Poroshenko discussing how the Trump family could profit off of government information, he'd be already hung for treason by now. So where are the other DAs that would be willing to hold Biden accountable?
Yeah, well, I think it's also a matter of them getting access to these emails, right? We've seen Comer, we've seen McCarthy, we've seen those in Congress trying to get these exact same emails. And, you know, we've been trying to get them for several years. When we first filed those lawsuits, nobody was really listening, right? Nobody wanted to hear about the truth with Biden and Ukraine and his son's companies. Now they're paying attention. And when they're asking NARA for these records and they're saying, okay, there's probably a dozen or two dozen. And we realized that we had a letter from NARA telling us that there were possibly 5,400. We knew we had to bring that to light in the public. And so, you know, you can't bring a prosecution, you can't bring charges if you don't have the evidence. And if you have entities keeping the evidence from the American public and from the DOJ, from the AGs, you name it, from Congress, they can't bring those charges, right? We've got gatekeepers now for this, and it's NARA right now. That's why they need to give over these records. They are incredibly important for, you know, just public trust.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the Republicans have finally opened an impeachment inquiry, the first step toward an actual impeachment. And don't you just love government? They're effectively having a meeting about a meeting to have a meeting as to whether or not they're actually going to move forward with impeachment. But how much evidence beyond these emails do you think is still out there? Like actual, you know, do you think for a moment that there could be an actual signed check by Joe Biden that we talked earlier about the chain of all of these fictitious names and businesses and whatnot? Do you think there's things like a signed check or something out there that would absolutely prove that, yes, Joe Biden was in on this scheme?
I mean, there could be anything out there, right? We just truly don't know. But there certainly have to be documents. And, you know, earlier you mentioned the Hillary Clinton server. This really does kind of, it reminds everyone of that. And we look back on that and, you know, cell phones got destroyed. Things got destroyed then. Here it appears that there really is a trail. And so it's going to take a lot of work by a lot of people to get this information out there. But what's in them is anyone's guess. But, you know, if people are hiding it, that's why I say it begs the question, what's in it and what are you hiding and why?
Yeah. And again, if you were doing business legitimately, there's no reason for all of these fake emails. There's no reason for all of those fake shell companies. There's just no legitimate reason for that if what you're doing is on the up and up. So, if push comes to shove and this is finally getting to see the light of day, and a lot of it is pointing to Hunter. Hunter for certain was in the middle of all of this. Do you think Joe would just pardon him, or is he going to let him take the fall?
if he can say the word pardon or find the right words these days, potentially. You know, I say that in jest, but I mean, what is he going to do? I don't know. Is he going to continue to run? I don't know. We don't know with Joe Biden right now. I mean, anyone's guess, who knows? Hmm. But you know, what we do know is that like the charges that were brought this week against Hunter Biden, what took so long, to bring those basic charges? There are whistleblowers everywhere. There is information out there. You know, get it out there. Let people investigate it. Let people see it. And, you know, if your son has engaged in corruption and fraud and stuff, he absolutely should not pardon him. Right. I mean, nobody is above the law. Nobody.
Well, that's what they say. But of course, we know Democrats don't really believe that, because as I said earlier, if all of this evidence was on Trump's side, oh, they would have already hung him for sure. So can a president pardon himself?
That is a great question. I don't actually know the legal answer to that. That's not something I've ever looked into. But I would imagine that in this situation, regardless, it's not going to get to that point, because if he's in power, we're never, you know, these records that would implicate him, I highly doubt, are going to get out there. Mm. We're going to do everything we can. But, you know, I don't mean to sound cynical. We will bring as much light to this as we possibly can, but I don't know if I can see it getting to that point.
Well, let's say there is some absolutely definite proof. You know, an impeachment trial only means something if the Senate actually convicts. Do you think that if there's enough solid evidence that there are enough Democrats who would say, yes, he needs to go?
Now I'm in the hot seat here. I would hope so. Let me just say, I would hope so. I don't want to be the cynical one here, but I would hope that that would be the case.
Well, I would certainly hope so as well, because, you know, when you've got that evidence and yet you're still defending a guy who's clearly corrupt, that says you're as corrupt as well. And anyway, she is Kimberly Herman, Chief Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. Their website is slfliberty.org, slfliberty.org. You'll want to go take a look at them. Kim, I want to thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to your win.
This has been great. Thanks for having me.
While doing some other radio-related research, I came across FeedSpot, which has over 4 million registered users. And they had an article listing the 30 best conservative talk shows, the best conservative talk shows from thousands of talk shows on the web ranked by traffic, social media followers, and freshness. So I scrolled through, seeing some familiar names, Toddcast with Todd Starnes, Right Side Radio, The Larry Elder Show, and quite a few regional shows. And then, lo and behold, at number 20, the iSpy Radio Show. What do you know about that? Thank you to all of you, our listeners, who helped make that happen, sharing our links, going to iSpyRadio.com. Isn't it cool to think you make good news happen? Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The iSpy Radio Show.